Welcome to Podability, the podcast for parents and families of disabled children, brought to you by Variety, the children's charity. I'm your host, Dave King. During the coronavirus crisis we now find ourselves in, almost all of the official lockdown advice has been aimed at adults and has tended to ignore the way children's lives have been turned upside down. Children with disabilities and sensory difficulties in particular have largely been left out of the conversation, which is surprising, given that they've been among those hardest hit by school closures, disrupted routines, a lack of care support, as well as by the confinement measures, meaning vital outdoor activities have become limited. Many of the families that we at Variety support have reported that they are really struggling. Meltdowns have become more common and anxiety levels are rising. In today's podcast episode, we're asking, what impact is the current situation having on your child with sensory difficulties? And how can you manage these issues at home? Joining me remotely today over Skype to discuss these questions is Zoe Mayu, an occupational therapist and internationally renowned expert in the area of sensory integration, and Michael and Paul Atwell Bryce, who are parents to twins Levi and Lucas, both of whom have autism, amongst other conditions. Michael and Paul, can you describe what the lockdown has been like for you as parents and carers of Levi and Lucas?
Because it was really sudden, it's been a real sudden, like, sharp change for the boys. And we found it really difficult because suddenly their world's been turned upside down. Obviously, having access to school, they go to an autism school, all the specialist facilities and things there, and the sensory rooms, the ball pools, and all the activities they do is just suddenly finished. And we found it really difficult. The boys have found it extremely difficult, especially there's no park. You can't even take them to the park outside or things that you'd normally do in the Easter holidays or anything. So it's been really extremely difficult for us all to manage.
The thing is, with having identical twin boys, both with severe autism, we spend our whole life planning and structuring everything we do. Now, all of a sudden, this is against everything we have been teaching and working together as a family. So now, as a family unit, everything's gone up in the air, and all the years of doing the structure that we do with Levi and Lucas, using the PECs to get them to engage in any activity, to pre-warn them on what's going to be happening, suddenly all that has stopped, and we've never known anything like this in our lives before, like a lot of other families across the whole world as well, you know, and it's just there, it's extremely difficult. And it's also really sad as well, because at times we see the boys withdrawing, becoming really quiet and somber. And we work so hard to make them lively, happy, you know, joyful and loud. And at the moment, we're not seeing those kind of behaviours from the boys as much. And that's, as parents, that's what makes us sad.
Thank you. Zoe, can you give us an overview then of some of the kinds of sensory approaches and strategies that perhaps Michael and Paul could adopt at home in light of some of the difficulties that the boys are now experiencing?
Sure. And first, I just want to say, Michael and Paul, that my heart really goes out to you. As soon as this happened, my thoughts immediately went to families like yours, and just so much concern for not only for the children, but for the parents, for the extended family, of just imagining what it would be like to come up with strategies and for coping. So my heart does go out to you. You know, I think occupational therapists have been grappling to move quickly to help families like yours. And we have been thinking about what is possible to do in the home. I think your boys, Levi and Lucas, are they teenagers?
Yeah.
How old are they?
They're both 13.
Yeah. So, you know, one thing is that we want to be careful not to assume a one size fits all. I wouldn't want to assume that I know what your boys need. We'd need to know a lot more about them. I don't know if you are in touch with their occupational therapist, who they see, you know, on any kind of a basis, but, or maybe an occupational therapist that you saw in the past. But someone who knows the boys might be able to give you some more targeted ideas. I think in general, you know them, you probably know what their some of their sensory needs are, as well as things that maybe are irritating to them. And to think about ways to give them what they need during the course of the day. I tend to look at this situation as one that may have some opportunities, you know, being home all day. And I'm really a strong proponent for giving children as much early practice and opportunities for learning life skills. So sometimes when we think, kids couldn't possibly handle that task, or, you know, maybe it's not something you would think about doing, but I would just encourage you, when you can cope with it, to try engaging them in as many daily life routines, doing the laundry, folding laundry, maybe washing some windows, mopping the floor, vacuuming, things that involve heavy work, a lot of pressure on the joints, push-pull kinds of activities in general tend to be calming and organizing. They tend to make our body just feel better. So a lot of those are things that, you know, we all need to do around the home. And it has the double benefit of possibly giving them some practice and some life skills that they may or may not have tried before. Carrying, you know, if there's groceries being delivered or any kind of packages being delivered, having them help carry those kinds of heavy things. I wonder, do you by any chance have a pull-up bar in any of your doorways?
So where we live, we're very much in a cul-de-sac and we don't have stuff like that. We have a garden to the back of the house, which we kind of let them use as and when they want it, more like a free flow, especially when the weather's a bit warmer as well. And they, both boys like bouncy balls. So, you know, and speed balls in America, they call them speed balls. And so we kind of are just doing all those kind of activities that make them happy. If they're on the iPad, we're trying to navigate them to apps that they use in school as well. And just when we're navigating them to the apps that you use in school, we're only doing that in school hours to try and give them some kind of routine there as well. But it's all very difficult because still the actual children here don't understand why everything has suddenly stopped.
I think Levi and Lucas are finding it more difficult because they are both severely autistic, so the non-verbal, and they have really limited understanding. So to try and get them in to engage with new things is really difficult. And normally, so this is the UK's Easter holidays, we'd always take them like to a holiday park and or to like a theme park. They really love roller coasters and they get a lot back sensory wise from being on roller coasters with the wind running through the hair and things like that. And we can't do obviously none of that at the moment. So we're trying to do different things with them and new things, but it is really difficult with the boys just because they've got severe epilepsy as well, so we also have to keep an eye on that.
And also the longer this goes on, the harder it's getting, because when you're 2 weeks of doing it, you feel like you're accomplishing certain aspects, but when you're 4 or 5 weeks into it, you start to struggle your own mindset, because we're all human, we're not machines or robots. Your own mindset is really starting to take its toll as well. And it's just trying to keep upbeat all the time. But then obviously because their routine structure and everything has totally gone out the window, then you get the different behavior patterns from the children as well. And, you know, that can be frustrating for both the parents, the caregivers, and the children themselves. Just kind of, there's no time space for time out or anything to be taken out of that situation and go move and do something else, because we are literally just stuck in the house.
Sure. Well, so I definitely hear you, and that's it's a lot to be coping with. And I think the balance between keeping the structure and then also giving everybody, you know, a little more leeway and not being too hard on yourselves or on anyone, just, you know that you're doing the best you can and not keeping the expectations unrealistic. To go back to some ideas, though, what I meant by a pull-up bar, and I think if you don't have one, this is something you probably could fairly easily order. It's just that kind of a bar that goes between a doorway that's used to do chin-ups. I don't know what you call them there. We call them chin-ups. But I have always found that simple device that you can put in any home, it secures firmly between any doorway.
Yeah.
Is a nice, easy thing, especially for boys as they're going into adolescence. It's, you know, it's a way to get that hanging and a little bit of swinging. And, you know, it's not the kind of swinging maybe they're used to at a park, but it might give them a little bit of a physical activity that would provide some of the sensory experience that is calming and organizing to them. It's something that's not very expensive. It's easy to put up. It might be worth a try.
Yeah.
The other thing you mentioned that they like the, you know, kind of rides and fast movement kinds of things, I think you said, roller coasters.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things, the way that sensory system works, the vestibular sense that gives you the sense of motion, it's very closely tied to our visual system. And some of the telehealth activities that we've been doing with children involve having them watch rides. You can, I don't know if you've tried that, but you can have them watch clips of being on a roller coaster, being on a fast moving ride. And, you know, you can stand behind them and kind of give them a little bit of a sway so that they actually get a little bit of that sensation, the way the car might be, you know, moving side to side or back and forth. That may actually give them some of that movement experience that they're missing and needing.
Yeah.
There are also, you probably searched, but I know that a lot of occupational therapists are putting content online. I have a colleague who every morning here at 9 o'clock, she has a Facebook Live activity called Morning Cup of Go. And I'd be happy to send you the link if you can't find it. It's through PlaySense, but it's also recorded, so you wouldn't have to be on at 9 o'clock a.m. our time. But it might be something interesting for them to watch. She takes the kids on walks outside and does scooter board activities. And I think just watching some of those activities that they've done, maybe in therapy, might also be engaging for them.
That's great, thank you, Zoe. Coming back to the idea of the pull-up bar, and coming back again to something you talked about, Michael and Paul, the sensory bar idea and this shift that children have had, where their routine has changed entirely. One of the things that Variety has done in response to this virus is provide sensory packs for children at home, the kinds of things they would get in school to help them replicate some of the normality of what is a very unnormal situation, if you like. And the bars similar, you know, what sort of resources can we give children just to help them cope a little bit better? Michael and Paul, I wondered, you know, what do you have already by way of sort of sensory toys and resources, and how are they impacting the behavior of the boys?
We were really lucky a few years ago. We did have a grant from Variety Club, and we've got a few big pieces of sensory equipment. So the boys have already got like a big bubble tube and a tactile sensory wall. And we do use them quite often, especially when the boys are distressed. We can take them out to, like, if one of the boys has been really loud and noisy and upsetting the other, Levi or Lucas, we can take them out into that sensory room where we've got them bigger pieces of equipment. And that really helps calm and settle them down in them situations. We've also used it to let them rest off seizures afterwards, put them like on a big beanbag and just lay them near the big bubble tube, and that really helps a lot.
So I wonder if you've got any sort of insights into how some of these sort of toys can be really helpful for families that maybe have never considered that they should look at having some.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the main points for families is to somewhat put on their detective hats and to watch the kinds of activities the children seem drawn to, what kinds of things they're liking, whether it's just maybe they're just rocking back and forth, to try to think of sensory when you're looking at behavior and think, what kind of sensation does this, you know, activity suggest that this child might need? And then to look for kind of constructive, practical, safe ways to get that sensation. So, for example, the rocking, you know, I've been working a lot with a furniture company, a classroom furniture company called Verco. They now make a rocking chair. It looks very much like Verco makes most of the classroom furniture in the United States. So they have now made a rocking chair that looks very much like the regular classroom chair, so it doesn't stand out for kids using it in a classroom. But there is they do have a distributorship in the UK, and they have these rocking chairs. They're not like huge, giant rocking wooden rocking chairs. They're much more compact. That might be something to consider getting for the boys, because they could be rocking safely. There's a stopper on the back so they can't go all the way back. Some of them have arms on them, which gives a little extra push, you know, through the body. And, you know, when they're doing their maybe iPad activities or even some of their schoolwork, getting that motion through a rocking chair is something that's sometimes practical and easier to do at home.
And something that the boys do a lot, isn't it? Rock back and forth. But we'd never actually force her getting them a rocking chair, though, would we?
No, that's a really good idea.
Well, so I would suggest you contact Southpaw, is the name of the company that is distributing the chairs in the UK. And, you know, they're really practical. They're made for this, you know, they have a version that's made for kind of boys who are getting bigger and who have conditions like autism, knowing that they might really take a lot of wear and tear, but they're practical and they're a good way to get some of the movement that they might be needing. You know, it sounds like you're using what you have, which is great. I think you look around and you think, well, how can we use shower and bath time to get some of the tactile activities? How might we use our couches and other, you know, kind of cushions to get, you know, some jumping, rolling activities?
Yeah.
You know, but depending on their individual needs, again, we don't like to say to try something with everyone. You have to kind of see what they need. I would really maybe journaling to during this time. I know you probably have your hands full, but just some quick notes about, you know, what things seem, when do they seem best? When do they seem to feel the most calm, the most organized, the most focused? And to think about what kinds of activities or experiences precede those great moments, because then you might be able to add more of them. I'm sure you're already using a lot of visual cues. I don't know if you've used social stories with the boys before.
Yeah.
But, you know, using, making some stories, maybe you take some pictures and just make them visual, but to help them put into context what's happening right now. Like you said, it's harder with them if they have more limited language, but, you know, just to give them some stories, to give them that internal practice with what is happening and knowing what to expect and trying to get a better sense of what's going on right now.
I think that's really relevant, Zoe. There are thousands of children in the UK who have sensory processing difficulties, but because sensory processing disorder isn't a recognised disability here, they're missing out on the opportunity to access occupational therapists, to get the sort of resources that might have quite a significant impact on their behaviour or their educational attainment. I think there could be lots of parents listening to this conversation who are thinking, gosh, this sounds like it could really help my child, but I've never thought about this before. You talked about identifying when children seem the calmest, but are there any other sort of indicators, sort of starting points for parents to sort of things to look out for and top tips of where to start if this is new to them?
Well, I think I would start just by saying to look for resources and, again, to try to make some contacts so that we're not just randomly doing trial and error. I definitely can give a few tips, but we just want to be careful that we don't give the idea that whatever suggestion we have is going to work for every child. Yeah. There is a really nice group in the UK called ASI, which stands for AIRS Sensory Integration, WISE, which stands for Wales, Ireland, Scotland, and England, ASI WISE. And they have a lot of resources. You might look at their website and consider making contact with some of the therapists in that group. So when we talk about sensory, a lot of people think mostly about the aversions. We know that many people with autism have sensitivities to sound, to touch, to smell, and that's certainly the case. So you want to, I'm sure you already are aware, you know what things might set off Levi and Lucas if they have those sensitivities. And we want to really respect that. When we see those kind of big reactions to sensation, it's real. And it's hard for us to even imagine, like, how could something so minor, a little, you know, bee buzzing out by the window, cause such a meltdown? But we have to remember that those kinds of heightened sensitivities are actually a survival mechanism. It's our brain telling us, they're telling the individual that they are in danger and they need to get away. And that's how it's being processed. So we have to really respect that and not think about, oh, it's no big deal. But besides that, there are a lot of other aspects of sensory and motor functions. So just a couple things to think about. One is that a body awareness, knowing where our body is, and touch awareness, knowing how to use touch to guide actions, is often not working well for people with autism and other sensory-related conditions. So if you see your boys trying to button or trying to manipulate a tool, there's a good chance that their sense of touch is not supporting that ability, that skill. So activating and waking up the tactile receptors, not only to work on kind of the aversion, but to actually work on the perception of touch, can really help with those kind of fine motor skills. So getting the hands ready, even clapping or rubbing or using lotion, or, you know, that's why occupational therapists do those activities where they have the kids put their hands in bins of beans and find things, to activate the tactile receptors that will guide action. So if you see your child, you know, fumbling or being clumsy with something, to think about, what are they lacking? What are they missing? How do I figure out how to wash a dish and get the dirt off of it? I use my sense of touch. I'm not looking at the dish. I'm feeling what I'm doing. And they may not have that. The other, just another main point, is this idea of what we call motor planning or praxis. Most people with autism have difficulty with the planning of an action. Their motor functions are good. They're not, in general, they don't have the same kind of condition as someone who maybe has cerebral palsy or some other kind of neurological based issue that affects their motor execution. What they have trouble with is figuring out how to get started, what to do first, how to sequence actions. So in everyday simple activities, that's why I go back to things like setting the table, any kind of meal preparation, doing the laundry, putting the laundry into the washing machine, folding laundry, putting things away. All of those kinds of activities, you can help and look at, where's the breakdown? Do they know how to get started? Do they know how to do the steps in the logical sequence? And if not, you know, to try to support that, because that also not only works on their motor planning, but it also gives them some new life skills.
Zoe, that's brilliant. It's so grounded in the everyday, just in the real life. And particularly at the moment where we're just living wall to wall and room to room with little opportunity to go out. I think this is really helpful. Paul, Michael, I wonder what advice you might have for other parents who need help sort of structuring and planning their day. What are some of the things that you've learned really work with Levi and Lucas?
I think at the moment, if we kind of we're working each day as though they're at school. So the morning routine is fine up until they would leave for school. So, and then 2 hours after that is when we tend to have to really dig deep and find things to do, don't we?
Mm.
Just those few hours when they're at school is the most crucial part for us, isn't it? And then obviously we've got the afternoon where they come back from school and we can pick the routine up again as though it was a school day. That's how we've been trying to do it. And it has been helping, but it's just, I think as a parent to children with special needs and disabilities, when they are just getting so frustrated and you're doing everything you can, I think we would say to all the other parents out there as well, you know, you're not on your own. Everybody's in this together. You know, we all have the days where, yeah, some days are better than others, aren't there? But then there's days where, you know, they might not be as proactive and as positive, but that's all right.
We've been trying to section the day off, haven't we? So the school days, we've been trying to keep them more or less like they are at school. So they still have the breakfast and everything at home.
That really helps.
We're not just leaving him in the pyjamas all day. We're still getting him dressed and keeping him in like the similar routine. And then breaking the day off. So Levi and Lucas like doing things like the peg puzzles and just sectioning it off into like a visual timetable, so they're doing different things throughout the day, because if it were left up to the boys, Lucas would just bounce his bouncy ball all day and Levi would just sit on the iPad all day, and we don't want that.
And we're kind of structuring those times as well, so we don't have the TV on all the day, all the time with their favourite programme on. We turn it off, so we engage them with other activities and move them towards things that they could manage in what activities they enjoy.
And we know, like recently, obviously the UK government's just said that children with autism and different disabilities can go out more than once. So that's took some pressure off, because we know that if we do want to take them out for a walk, if it is getting too much being inside with the cabin fever, that we've got that option to take them out a little bit more, because they have got one of them disabilities that they are allowed to go out more than once.
We took them out in the car the other day, and we just went for a drive. Nobody got out of the car. And how happy Levi and Lucas were just to be out of the house in the car. They were so happy. You would think we'd taken them back to Disney World.
But it was similar to what Zoe's just said. So them having the window open, and we're kind of on a 60-mile-an-hour road, so it was quite fast, and that wind coming in, were kind of simulating a roller coaster or a ride, and they were getting that sensory back just by going for a drive round, and that things like that, just little things, because that's the only type of things you can do at the moment. It did make a huge difference. It made them a lot happier that day, didn't it?
Just to pick up on what you said, for anyone who's not caught hold of this, last week the UK government clarified situation with regards to going outdoors for people with sort of specific health conditions. So naturally you can now, as you said, leave your home if they've got a medical need, even if that is travelling outside of your local area. And they specifically said that learning disabilities, autism, is included within that, which is some relief. And you know, I have I care for a 7-year-old, and the iPad is a constant daily struggle. I mean, every morning it feels like Groundhog Day when we're, you know, he gets his 30 minutes in the morning, and then a bit like, you know, we go round and round that. I think it's really difficult, isn't it, to balance allowing children to realise they're not at school, and we are not teachers, parents are not teachers. They can't be expected to manage that level of structure. And yet to abandon it altogether is to kind of give over to chaos, and becomes really difficult to manage the day, and also isn't doing our children any favours for when we eventually move out of this crisis. Mm. So it's a really tricky balance. I think a lot of families probably are, to some degree, really enjoying the chance to spend extra time together, but when also they're trying to work to get the bills paid, really tricky. I wonder if either of you have got any advice for how to manage the impact of having children at home, also needing to work, and possibly also needing to care for siblings as well. Yeah, Michael and Paul, if you want to pick that up first, and then perhaps Zoe, you might respond with some thoughts.
Yeah, I think for this question, we're really lucky because we're also foster carers, so we're kind of self-employed. So we're able to stay at home anyway and look after the children. So that side...
Because our work is home-based as well. So we're kind of quite fortunate there. Although it's home-based, it's never, ever been home-based like this before. I can assure you of that. You know, so when people say, you know, your job mainly is working from home, it's never, ever been like this. You know, I mean, joking aside, we all joke, even with our friends on the phone about, oh, it feels like the house is turning into a cafe, a prison, you know, because, you know, nobody can just get out. We're all stuck here. And it feels like all we're doing is feeding, changing nappies, bathing, washing, ironing, trying to engage the kids, trying to keep their spirits active, trying to find things that will make them happy where we can get something back from them, you know, and none of us are machines. We're all humans. And we're just trying to do the best we all can do, really, in such a terrible situation. Because the reality of the situation we're in is, I mean, you just need to look at how many people are dying from this disease as well. And I think when you're having a really tough day with the kids and you're thinking, gosh, this is so hard, I can't cope. You know, you just need to remember the reality of what is actually going on outside your house in the real world as well.
Yeah,
I think that does help us a lot. You think, well, you know, we've got so much to be thankful and grateful for, you know, in those times where so many people are losing their lives. Yeah, we might be having a really tough day and the kids might be having a really big meltdown. You know, we might feel like we're failing as parents as well. But, you know, that's all natural. Those are natural emotions that everybody feels. Everybody across the whole of the world feels that, you know, and it's just about how to understand that and be open with it as well. I think by being open with how you're feeling all the time is your therapy. I think if you hide how you feel, if you hide how the day's been, you know, I think that's when it can kind of come back and bite you a bit. If you're just very open with everything and use your supportive network by phone, FaceTiming, WhatsApping, everything, that's when you have to use that to your advantage as well, to be able to offload when you've had a really tough day at home.
I think this question of how do you reset your expectations of what you can do, and actually it's okay that days are complicated and difficult, because nothing about this current situation is regular or normal or uncomplicated.
So, I mean, we've had days here in our house where it's like it's felt like every day has been a Sunday.
Yeah.
And then we've had days where, oh gosh, it's 4 o'clock already. We need to start doing tea. So those days have gone really quick. Then there's been other days where, oh, it's only 2 o'clock. It feels like we should be getting them ready for bed. you know, we've had all those days and we have those quite often. So, and that's what we try to do within the house and the garden. We try to be really active. You know, we don't want the kids sat at a table doing schoolwork all the time, because that's not reality neither. You know, that they have got to be proactive. And just by doing different stuff, it could be something so simple with having the boys in the garden, picking up all the leaves and putting them into the tub as we're cleaning the garden. We can use that and we can be showing them life skills as well. Or what else have we been doing that we've been trying to use this experience to push them as well as much as we can?
Yeah.
Because we don't normally get this amount of time with them apart from the summer holidays. So we are trying to use that to our advantage as well. But the more we do that, the more tired we're getting.
Yeah. Let me tell you, there are days where I wish I was in bed at 2 o'clock, and I'm sure we've all been
and
there.
You know, all this where people say, oh, when the kids go to bed, that's your time as an adult. Oh no. You know, the kids go to bed 20 minutes later, we're not far behind.
Zoe, in your experience, huge experience of working with parents, What's your advice on how people can manage the balance between, you know, the sort of regular routine, but also not overdoing it and looking after themselves, making sure that their own expectations of what they can achieve are reasonable?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think you brought up so many good points. You have to not be too hard on yourself and, you know, just recognize you're doing the best you can. This is a really unprecedented situation. There's no rule book for this. You know, I have been encouraging the families to think about, you know, what are the things they're missing the most? And what is there some way to approximate? You know, what are, you know, we can't replace everything that's missing right now, but can we approximate some of the things? Like if it's, you know, obviously if we're missing being with friends, we can do some of the Zoom or online kinds of connections. But to just think about like what each person needs, not only for the kids, but as the parents as well, you know, do you enjoy music? Maybe you make sure that you get a good 10 minutes of just time on your headphones somewhere during the day. Setting aside even small little segments of time. You know, I'm on the board of directors of a preschool, and they use this approach that they call the 10-minute cure, which I used with my own children when they were young. And it sounds so simple. It seems like, oh, no, this cannot possibly help. But it's amazing how much it helps. So in this activity, for each child, you take 10, 15 minutes every day where one adult is with that one child. And I know it might sound ridiculous because you're with the kids all day long already, but this is time that is just for that one child, maybe in a room where you know you're safe, you close the door, and you just do whatever the child wants to do. Maybe not an iPad because that would just bring them into their own world, but you don't bring your phone, you don't bring any other distractions, and you give them that time. Sometimes families who do this keep like a special box of activities that they use for just that time. And the predictability of it, knowing that it's going to happen every day, makes a big difference for a child to know that they're going to have their own time with one adult. And in some ways, I think the adults need that too, just to know that they have that me time, even if it's 10 or 15 minutes, that you just find a way to carve out a little chunk of time for yourself to do whatever is going to make you feel centered and organized. I know it's not always practical to keep these kinds of things going, but when we can do them, they do seem to really help. And it sounds like you have a great support system there. As much as you can reach out to other people and get tips and supports for each other, other families, that's also really important to do during this time.
The support network is a really, I think, good thing for us to explore. You know, it can feel at the moment like all of our support networks have sort of disappeared. And if you've lost your respite care, if you've lost the opportunity to focus on some of your younger siblings while your older siblings are at school during the day, we've lost the opportunity for you know, grandparents to come around and babysit because they're isolating. It can feel like the support network has really been bruised. I wonder, Michael, Paul, you know, do you have anything to share? How have you managed to maintain some level of support network through this period?
I think that has been the most difficult thing, because like you've just said, the things like when Levi and Lucas go to school, that's the time for the younger twins and things like that, and all that's finished now, and we're sharing his time out constantly with six children. So there's eight of us in the house altogether. And the support network from his wider family, like my parents and his sisters and things like that, we really miss all that. Things like, especially at Easter time, where you're used to just dropping Easter eggs off and stuff like that, and having to just drop them off at the doorstep in a carrier bag and leave and things like that. It's just really bizarre.
It's really hard because, as a couple as well, when your children go to school, we've always used that as our time to be able to get things done together with no distractions, not having the kids about. Sometimes we would actually just go and have something to eat during school hours as well. And we're not doing any of that. But another really difficult time we're facing, obviously, Levi and Lucas turn 14 next week. Now, I'm going to be very honest about this. As a parent, I feel lots of emotions about this. I feel like we're not able to give them the birthday that they deserve, the experiences that they deserve, because we always celebrate every milestone, any achievement that Levi and Lucas achieve, we celebrate that to show that you're able to achieve anything you want. And it's not, life is not a competition. Life is about celebrating everything that that child can achieve. And here we are facing their birthday. And we normally love this time of year to be able to get out and about and really make them so happy and make it so personal for them. And now we're stuck in the house. So what that does to us as parents, in particularly me, it makes me feel really sad because I feel like I'm failing as a parent.
I think a lot of people know with special needs children, they don't normally get invited to birthday parties a lot because they always tend to get excluded. So we've always done the opposite and normally put a big birthday party on for the boys, either at like a local village hall or something like that, and invited a real mixture of mainstream and children from the boys' school, different disabilities, different needs. We've always done that for the boys, and this is probably one of the first times that we won't be able to do that, and we'll just be kind of based in the house and doing the best we can, weren't we, for this situation.
You know, and the reality of it is, you know, we all have emotions and feelings, and as a parent, you always want the best for your children, regardless of whether they are mainstream or, you know, they are special educational needs or whatever, you want the best for them. And their birthday is about celebrating their lives and everything that they are, who they are as people, individuals. And suddenly we can't be doing any of that. And we're trying to find ways to be able to do that. And, you know, it's not possible.
Your story is one I think that parents up and down the country will really resonate with. One of the things that Variety has done for many years are offer celebration parties, large scale, for children from SEND and mainstream schools. And the last couple of years, we've started to offer those in schools where we go in and deliver them to smaller groups, precisely because teachers are telling us that a lot of children with special educational needs, particularly those with sort of behavioural sort of conditions or conditions that mean that parents are scared of taking their children or having children with their conditions, they just don't get to go to a party.
Yeah, but the only reason parents are scared of that, and we know this more so than ourselves, is because of people's perceptions, yeah, people's opinions. We feel that all the time as well. You know, we went through a stage of years saying, oh, we're really sorry, but they've got autism. But hang on, the people we love the most, we're apologising about. And I think once we changed our mindset on that, we were able to then almost flourish with them and show the world this is what autism is all about. Nobody's the same. Nobody is better than anybody else. And the more we can talk about autism into the wider communities and educate people, the better. You know, just because somebody's got autism, why shouldn't they do this? Why shouldn't they do that? Why shouldn't they be invited? And we are we are all about that all the time, aren't we?
And things like inviting other people from the boys' school and with different disabilities to the boys' party, you know, there've been children that are over 10-year-old and the parents have been in tears saying they've never been invited to a party before. And they've brought the kids and we've said, look, just try it. There's a quiet area if they need it. If they can manage it, if for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, it doesn't matter, at least they've attended and they've took a goodie bag or whatever, at least they've tried. And a lot of parents have, like, got really upset about that because we noticed it ourselves when the boys were a lot younger, and because the parents had come in and this were like a mainstream nursery, they'd sometimes see the boys having a meltdown or lashing out or whatever. They'd get excluded from being invited to these parties, and they'd never been invited to any parties when you knew there were parties happening and kids were going to different birthday parties, but Levi and Lucas never got invited. So we, like, purposely changed that ourselves and always invited all the children, like, that were in boys' class or whatever, didn't we?
And to see so many diverse individuals in one place, isn't that just so beautiful to see that?
Just amazing. And Zoe, I know your work has been about increasing participation, isn't it? What are your thoughts?
Well, I'm just feeling so sad to hear your angst and your concern over not being able to give them, you know, the birthday. I hope that you can bring to the forefront of your mind how much you're doing to keep them safe and understanding them and giving them, you know, such a loving home. So I hope you can bring those thoughts forefront and not be too hard on yourself. And, you know, it sounds like the outing in the car was a great success. I mean, maybe you think about what can you do to make this birthday, it'll be a different birthday, but make it memorable. You know, maybe some of their friends that you would have invited to the party can go on a car parade in their own cars. You know, maybe you can organize a little car parade where they can see each other through the car windows and have a parade, and they all get out for a drive, or maybe some kind of a Zoom gathering where they can see their friends. I know it's not the same, but I think, you know, you just want to keep in mind how important it is that you're keeping them safe, and this isn't your doing.
You know, Zoe, I am sorry to interrupt, but I just wanted to share this and see what your thoughts were on this. Because obviously we have a Facebook page for the family, and we often go live as a family to show people what we're up to and how the boys are, what they're doing and stuff. And we had this idea last week that when it's their actual birthday, the best time generally in the day for Levi and Lucas, when they're at their best, we know this by the back of our hand. So it's normally about 3 o'clock. And so every birthday, that's what time we kind of sing happy birthday to them. So mm-hmm. they are able to kind of really enjoy that moment. So we said that on social media, we really want to go live on Facebook mm-hmm. to sing happy birthday, but for everybody else to virtually join in and sing happy birthday with us. Although they can't be there with us in person, we feel like they're there in spirit.
That's great. That's great. And it's something you can record, right? And they could listen to it over and over again, too. I mean, there are those kind of added bonuses. But and being something on media, they probably would be attracted to it. I think that's a great idea. You know, that's the thing. We all have to be extra creative during these times. But I just hope you can see that you're still going to give them a birthday celebration, and it's not going to be, I mean, for them, it may be actually one of a happier one, just being with their family and being together. And, you know, there might be things about this situation that they're appreciating in ways we won't even know for a while.
Yeah.
I think this idea of how do we celebrate our children is always the number one for any parent. You know, you absolutely want to give your child the best of the best, whatever the day is, whatever the situation is. I wonder, you know, it leads us nicely into thinking about there are some opportunities here. Life isn't normal at the moment, whatever that looks like anyway. So I wonder what we're learning from this, that actually we might take from this sort of crisis to maybe implement beyond this, and what are our learnings from this? What are the opportunities to shift how we work and how we manage our time and be with our children differently? Zoe, I don't know if you've got anything you've learned so far, and then Paul will come to you.
You know, I think just to really be on the lookout for things that you didn't know about your kids. I mean, you know them so well, but in this unusual time, are there some challenges or tasks that you really didn't think they could do that for whatever reason, you're trying them and they suddenly surprise you? Those are moments, I think, to celebrate and to build on. And again, just to keep thinking about, you know, I think that was so great that you could come up so quickly with the realization that going out for that drive really made them happy. I'm a big proponent for taking notes when possible, because sometimes, I mean, so much happens in a day and the days blend into one another and it's easy to lose track. But if you can take some notes of, wow, that was really a good day, or what did we do today that really made this a better day? What were some of the activities? And then capture those so you can build on them. I think those are some of the things that might come out of this and be positive, that we learn some new strategies for just recognizing some simple everyday things that make us happy and make us comfortable and more engaged.
Michael, I wonder if you've got any idea, Paul, of what have you learned from this that you might take forward and keep doing?
I think it's similar to what Zoe's just said, like the thing with the car. We always knew Levi were flapping it back at Kai and he gets really excited and happy, but never kind of linked it to he's getting the same happiness and joy and stimulus as it would be on like a roller coaster. So we don't always need to go to places like that. Just a simple like drive on the motorway would probably get the same effect to Levi and to what he's getting out of it, to go into like Alton Towers or a theme park, isn't it?
Great. That's a really helpful place to start to wrap up our conversation. You know, it can be about the simple stuff. Variety's publishing a guide, a DIY guide, for what you can do at home to create sensory stimulation and calmness techniques with stuff that you found around the house. And we've got these packs that we're putting out to families with very simple, straightforward toys in that will just allow the simplest of things to really change and support a child's behaviour. Before we wrap up, I wonder if you've got a final tip you'd like to share, Zoe, I'll come to you first, for parents who are supporting children with sensory difficulties during this lockdown period.
Oh, gosh. Well, I guess I would say think about sensory broadly. Think about all aspects of sensation, taste, smell, movement, pressure on the body, touch, and of course, visual and auditory. And look for the things that are both irritating, that can be avoided or changed, and especially for the things that are comforting, organizing, and helpful, because our sensory experiences do so much to either support or hinder how we engage. And the better we understand what we need and recognize in ourselves, oh my gosh, when I am around the smell of citrus or vanilla or lavender, I feel so much calmer. Or this really bothers me, this particular sound really bothers me. The more we're self-aware, the more we can appreciate the individual differences in everyone and help everyone to be as organized and comfortable and happy as possible.
That's brilliant. I'm now sat here wondering what those things are for me. A brilliant advice for all of us. Paul, anything from you? What would be your top tip for parents who are supporting children with sensory difficulties now?
I just think my advice would be not to be hard on yourself, not to beat yourself up about whether you're doing everything you can, and also to be very open about how you feel with your supportive network. I think that's what you've just got to do. Almost see that part as your therapy, just to be able to offload, and don't, you know, feel like you're failing, because nobody's failing, because this is new to everybody. There is no right way or wrong way to do this. Nobody's done this before, so we're just all in this together.
I could not agree more. You know, just don't be hard on yourselves, manage your expectations. Thank you, Zoe, Michael, Paul, for joining me today and for your honesty and your sharing. Thank you, our listeners, for tuning in to this episode of Podability, brought to you by Variety, the children's charity. If you like what you heard, please share it with your friends. You can find us on iTunes by searching for Variety Podability, where you can rate, review, and subscribe to the series.